WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. We are now live here, of course, at the College of Communication Arts and Sciences here on the campus of Michigan State University. I am your host, Al Martin, and we've got a great hour in store for all of you sports talk fans out there. I took a trip out to Diamonddale, Michigan last night to check out the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am Basketball Championship. It was fun. Fun. I'm going to miss it, folks. Of course, it's now August, and pretty soon we will be transitioning to a ton of football talk. But the Moneyball Pro-Am was a great taste of what's to come for Tom Izzo and his Michigan State men's basketball team this upcoming year. We'll talk about the Moneyball Championship takeaway. Also, the Detroit Tigers, they couldn't get number 9. That's right. Their 8-game win streak was snapped yesterday afternoon in the finale against the Chicago White Sox. We'll recap what took place there. Also, the Olympic opening ceremony takes place tonight at 7:30 p.m. out in Rio de Janeiro. We will go through what to watch for throughout the next 3 weeks. It's going to be fun, folks, so you don't want to miss that. And also, we bring you a special feature from our very own Mr. Peter Worf, centered on historic baseball. That and so much more. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. Without further ado, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, how about this? Great news for the Michigan State men's basketball team. The squad received its first commitment of 2018 from 6'8", 225-pound forward Thomas Kithier. Yes, the Macomb, Dakota product announced his decision via Twitter. A 3-star prospect, Kithier held scholarship offers from DePaul, Oakland, and Rice, among others. Now, 247 Sports ranks Kithier the number 4 prospect in the state of Michigan in 2018. And speaking of the Spartan basketball team, count Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo as one who's in Draymond Green's corner. Green, who has been in the news, of course, for all the wrong reasons leading up to the Rio Olympics, was on the receiving end of a phone call from Izzo after a poor performance in Game 3 of the NBA's Western Conference Finals. Now, per the Detroit Free Press, Izzo was on the other end and was blatantly honest in telling Green that he had to play better. After the exchange, Izzo could tell Green was being a bit distant, saying, quote, "He was mad at me. So I text him and said, hey, if you're going to be mad at me, at least have the courage to tell me," end quote. And he goes on to say, "I got a phone call 30 seconds later. He said, coach, I'm embarrassed. I didn't play well enough. You have the right to tell me when I do wrong every day of the year for the rest of my life," end quote. Now, Izzo said, despite everything that has happened to the power forward, he still remains in Green's corner and will help in times of need. All right, Team Black took down Team Green in the Moneyball Pro-Am Championship game in Diamonddale, Michigan last night, 93-82, the final in that one. The event, which was standing room only and had been almost every Tuesday and Thursday for the past month of the league, saw Gavin Schilling and Josh Langford of MSU best Lou Rawls, Tum-Tum Nairn Jr., and Miles Bridges. Bridges threw in 35 buckets, and Nairn had 25, including a steal and a dunk in open court that was pretty nice, but it wasn't enough. Schilling had a team-leading 23 buckets for Team Black, while Josh Langford added 10. We'll have more on the Moneyball Championship game from yesterday in just a moment. The Detroit Tigers fell to the Chicago White Sox last night by a score of 6-3, snapping their 8-game win streak. Tigers pitcher Jordan Zimmermann returned from the disabled list, but it wasn't pretty. He allowed 6 runs on 6 hits and 2 walks over just 1 2/3 innings of work before he was yanked by manager Brad Ausmus. White Sox pitcher Jose Quintana limited the Tigers to 3 runs on 8 hits over 7 1/3 innings. He walked 1 and struck out, not 1, not 2, but 3. The Tigers take on the New York Mets tonight at Comerica Park. First pitch is set for 7:10 p.m. And on the mound for the Tigers tonight is Justin Verlander. He will face old friend and former teammate Curtis Granderson when the Mets come to town. So that should be a fun matchup. New York Yankees first baseman Mark Teixeira is set to retire at the end of the season. The move, which was reported this morning by USA Today, is expected to announce his end-of-season retirement at a conference this Friday. Now, Teixeira, who's 36 years old, is in the final year of an 8-year, $180 million contract that he signed during a transformative offseason with the Yanks. He is batting .198 with 10 homers in just 77 games, and he's missed significant time with an ACL tear in his right knee. All right, former Detroit Piston Mark McGwire was named as the head coach of the Champions League, a summer basketball league. Now, CEO and chairman Carl George announced the hiring of former McGwire as president of basketball, but schedules of player salaries and a number of teams are still a mystery. So there's a lot of things still up in the air when it comes to the Champions League. Now, Marcia Amador, a public relations representative for Rubenstein Public Relations, said George has a news conference scheduled for Tuesday in New York when some of the questions about how the league planned to move forward would be answered. The inaugural full season was set to begin in July 2017, with 16 teams expected to play 2 games a week at different locations. Aguirre and former New York Knicks great Walt Frazier are expected to reveal the rosters at a news conference on 1 p.m. Tuesday out in Manhattan. So exciting news there. A total of 271 Russian athletes have been cleared to take part in Rio in the Olympics. Alexander Yukov, who's the president of the Russian Olympics Committee, told reporters that news in Rio de Janeiro on Thursday. Now, the news means that 118 competitors of the 389-strong Russian team have been banned from competing out in Rio. The IOC, the International Olympic Committee, initially opted to leave the decision up to the governing bodies of individual sports. The IOC then later stated it would compile a 3-person panel to determine which Russian athletes would be cleared to take part before the games are set to begin today. And yes, the Olympic ceremony for the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics takes place tonight in Rio's Maracana Stadium. It will air on NBC at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time with a 1-hour tape delay. The entire ceremony is slated for 3 hours of fun. I will be tuned in, and I will be not only tuned in but also DVRing it at the same time. Gotta love the Olympic ceremony, Olympic opening ceremony, I should say. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Phone lines are now open. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start the show.
I was a GF until I was 29 years old. So my dream didn't come very easy. And, you know, all my buddies that now back there are saying, look how lucky you are. Look at the money you make. Look at what you do. You're on TV. I said, yeah, but you had the same chance. You just chose not to sacrifice to get where I got. And all the people in here that are successful, I will promise you, they all sacrifice. And I think that's what I done most, you know? And that's what I expect out of my players. You know, if you want to be a regular student, I mean, hell, if you're just a regular student, you're going to end up like Fred Heumann and you'll be a media guy because you don't need much of a degree for that. So I don't want guys to do that. I want them to dream big, I mean really big, and then shoot for it, you know? So my way of getting up was something. I worked 13 years for Judd Heathcote, so I'm going straight to heaven no matter what I do from here on out. I got a direct pass to heaven, and Michigan State's been good to me. I've had some chances to leave there. I just kind of like the college atmosphere. I like having an impact on kids, and I like where I live. So it's been good for me, and I think Judd always used to say, a good deal is one that's a good deal for you and a good deal for me. I think Michigan State's given me a lot, but I think I've given them everything I could give them in 30 years of them. So it's a good deal for both of us.
Welcome, ladies and gents, boys and girls. You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. TGIF. Can you believe it's already Friday? Wow. Time flies when you're having fun, and we have been having fun this entire week on WKAR AM 870. What you just heard was the voice of Tom Izzo, head men's basketball coach here at Michigan State University, and talking about giving love. Tom Izzo has given a lot of love to this program throughout the duration of his career. Man, oh man. And that bite was actually a snippet from coverage from the Detroit Free Press as Izzo talked during a Detroit Holy Redeemer fundraiser yesterday. Very cool stuff. And you know, Izzo, you know, he gave a speech and then he had a Q&A period with those in attendance. And, as I mentioned, our headliners, he talked about the relationship that he has with Draymond Green. You knew that was going to come up, right? Everything that Draymond has been through this summer, dating back to the situation at Rick's, an altercation that ensued between Green and now former Michigan State football player Jermaine Edmondson. To, of course, what took place earlier this week and the whole situation with the hiccup on Snapchat. So Izzo weighed in on the relationship that he has with Draymond Green and told a cool story, just a really cool story about how Izzo was chatting with Draymond after game three and, you know, what happened at the end of game three. Draymond, he took a swipe at LeBron James. And, LeBron tried to step over him, and Draymond takes a swipe at LeBron James and gets suspended for game four. And, you know, when you look at that situation, you know, Izzo, he reached out to Draymond and said, hey, man, you played bad. And, you know, Izzo jumped him, point blank, period. And, you know, there was this awkwardness between Green and Izzo, and he didn't hear anything back. And he's like, hey, are you going to talk to me? And, you know, Draymond says, yeah, I'm going to talk to you. So they talked a bit, and Izzo felt that Draymond was a bit cold. So after the brief exchange, you know, he leaves his office on campus, travels home, and then decides to text Green back and says, hey, if you're going to be mad at me, at least have the courage to tell me. And then Draymond immediately calls Coach Izzo and says, Coach, I'm embarrassed. I didn't play well enough. And then, you know, he goes on to say, you have the right to tell me when I do wrong every day for the rest of your life. So just a very cool story. And then you heard that snippet there in which Izzo talks about his job and, you know, how he wasn't hired. You know, he was a GM with the program all the way until he was 29. So success didn't come easy for him. And he just kind of recounts his whole career and how his buddies say, wow, Izzo, I mean, you're on television and look what you've done with the program. And Izzo talks about sacrifice and, you know, how he wants his guys to really shoot for the stars and not become a media member like me. because you don't, quote, need a degree for this, end quote. I know Izzo is just joking, but it's always fun when he pokes fun, but, you know, just has a jab at the various media members who cover him over time. And he always calls out my former boss and friend, Fred Heumann of WLNS TV6. So just a cool moment. And no matter what, Coach Izzo is going to have the back of his players. If they do wrong, of course, he's going to chastise them and say, hey, you did wrong. But he's going to have the back of his players in regards to helping them through whatever they're going through. Simple as that. And Izzo has always been a classy man and a classy individual in that regard. And he also even talks about the Olympics and chatted about, you know, the Olympic men's basketball team and how Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski, you know, he's set to coach the United States men's national basketball team in the Summer Olympics that begin on Saturday out in Rio. He's helping, he's helped, I should say, bring home 10 gold medals and has been a member of 20 different Team USA coaching staffs dating back to 1979. His total record, get this, 129 and just 7. So Izzo, you know, talked about his admiration for Coach K and what he's been able to do on the Olympic stage, and also that, hey, what's on his bucket list is he would love to coach the Olympic men's basketball team one day, you know? Heck, and he goes on to say, hey, even if I'm not the head coach, even if I'm just the water boy, I'm cool with that, all right? So I'm pretty sure for those that were in attendance for that Detroit Holy Redeemer fundraiser, I'm sure that was a treat because Izzo, who is always open, you got to hear Izzo really hit on a variance of topics and was, as always, very honest and in your face. So, gotta love Coach Izzo, man. When he decides to hang it up and no longer be the coach of the Michigan State men's basketball team, that is going to be one sad day. Again, folks, call in to be a part of today's show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I also want to hear from those that were in attendance out in Diamonddale, Michigan, at the AIM High facility for the Moneyball Championship game between Team Green and Team Black. I can't believe it's already coming to an end. You know, I remember covering this tourney at the very beginning of everything. And, you know, in the month of July, I'm sitting there saying, wow, every Tuesday and Thursday until the first week of August, this is going to be great. And now it's already come and gone. A bit sad, but it was fun being in the house for that championship game. And as expected, it was totally packed. I mean, I had to park way out near, like, the I believe it's like the Holiday Inn Hotel, which is, you know, down the street. But I had to park way out there because it was just jam-packed. There was no room in the parking lot. I mean, just crazy. Many of you came out last night to check out that game. And, you know, a few takeaways that I jotted down throughout the game. I mean, Miles Bridges, of course, is the biggest name that this tourney garnered throughout the summer, because the kid is just so talented. I mean, he can take over. He can do multiple things. He's freakishly athletic. And I think probably the biggest question mark for Miles' game, his offensive game, is his jump shot. You know, can he knock down the deep ball? And it's funny because I was sitting there talking to an individual, and when I got there, I mean, even the media, we had to stand up because it was that jam-packed. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder. So I found a space in between the metal bleachers, and I'm in the crowd, and I'm sitting there talking to a few people who are listeners of WKAR Radio and WKAR TV, and I was chatting with them about Bridges, and yeah, we were all in agreement that, yeah, if anything, you know, we would just love to see Bridges, his jump shot evolve a bit more. And then what happens to start the game? He knocks down back-to-back threes to start. So this kid is just proving all the doubters wrong and turning a lot of heads for people that don't know about him. So he's just fun to watch. And there was multiple times that he did that. I mean, he would come down, and you could tell that he was – I always say about the Summer League, it's an opportunity for you to, you know, be competitive and work on your game as well. You know, it's not like a college basketball season where at the end of the day, what matters most is getting the win. When it comes to Summer League, for a lot of these young studs, like an incoming freshman like Miles Bridges, it's an opportunity for them to get a feel for the game, to get a feel for the pace of the next level in college, and to work on, you know, respective parts of your game. And that's clearly what Miles Bridges was doing throughout the entire summer. I saw him take multiple threes and drain multiple threes last night. Also, I'm excited to watch Lou Rawls, Tum Tum Nieren Jr. this upcoming year, because it just from a mentality standpoint, it seems like Tum's mind frame has shifted into one of controlled aggressiveness. And what I mean by that is, you know, what you see with a lot of players who struggle with confidence or who have struggled with confidence throughout their careers, a lot of those individuals, when they decide to make a change and make a shift, they become overly aggressive with the basketball and they take arid shots. But what I love about Tum is that he's learning how to become controlled in his aggressiveness. You know, if he sees a lane, if he decides to take it, he's going to take it all the way. If there's nothing there, though, Tum does not force it. And that's what I really have picked apart when evaluating his outing for the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am tournament this year. I mean, it's been really fun to watch. And we saw, you know, talk about jump shots. And I had Tum on Current Sports TV, you know, as my latest guest. And I sat down with Tum and asked him about his jump shot before plantar fasciitis set in last year. I mean, this is a guy last summer who took somewhere near 30,000 three-pointers, okay? Working on that jump shot because he didn't want to be an offensive liability for his team. And then he gets injured, and that kind of throws everything off. But you can clearly see that Tum has worked on his jump shot as well. There were multiple times where he just said, give me the basketball, I'm taking the shot. And he drained it multiple times last night. And there was a nice fast break steal that led to a Tum dunk that I mentioned in our headliners. And at the half, Team Green had a 43-39 lead. And then all of a sudden, man, Team Black just exploded in the second half. It was close for much of it until I don't even know what his name is, but number two on Team Black, he just got hot from the three-point line and provided a cushion that Team Green just struggled to sort of cut down as the game went on. Also, a few people in the crowd that I spotted, I saw Michigan State running back Delton Williams. He was in the house. Also, a member of the coaching assistant staff, Jarius Jones, former player for the team as well. He was in the house sitting next to Williams. I even saw East Lansing boys basketball star Brandon Johns. He was in the house. It was fun getting a chance to see him walk around. He's going to be a great team for a great player, I should say, for Steve Fenimore's East Lansing Trojans. And one individual who I saw, and when I saw her, it kind of turned my stomach. And this is why I say that. Brandi Agee, who was a dear friend of Current Sports here, who we've had on the radio. We've had her on TV as well. I mean, she's just a media darling. Love her. Love watching her play as well. She had a great season last year. And since we've had her on, we've always talked about Brandy's struggles when it comes to health. You know, she had an ACL injury on both knees and is really just, you know, minor nicks here and there as well. And I see her in the stands with her sister, and all of a sudden I see her sister help her with some crutches. And then she comes down on the bleachers, and I look down on her legs, and I see a boot. I think it was on her left leg. It was one on one of the legs. It was a lower leg injury. And I see Brandy, you know, just take the crutches and walk off the court. And I'm sitting there saying, no, are you kidding me? So I'm really hoping that Brandi Agee's injury that I saw last night isn't too serious. The highlight of the night had to be Miles Bridges, of course. He's good for at least one every single time he steps on the hardwood. I mean, he had a putback dunk that was nasty over two guys that had the entire gym oohing and eyeing. I mean, it was crazy. Crazy, crazy stuff. In the end, though, 82-93, Black wins. Take it with a grain of salt. Take it with a grain of salt, folks, because, again, it is Summer League basketball. But it's good just to see a taste of what we will be getting this upcoming year for Tom Izzo's team. And I would be remiss if I had to choose an MVP from last night for Team Black. Clearly, it was Gavin Schilling, folks. Gavin Schilling was fantastic last night. I mean, he showed his jump shot. His jump shot has improved. He's got this little baby jump hook that he's been working on. It looks like he's gained a few more pounds of muscle. I mean, he was out-rebounding Miles Bridges on multiple occasions last night. So shout-out to Omari Sankofa of Sports Illustrated's Campus Rush, who we had on yesterday's show, because I asked Omari who he is looking forward to seeing the most, who's going to be that surprise breakout player for next year. And Omari confidently said, Gavin Schilling, a pick that he also had last year as well. Call in, folks, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Mike from Saginaw who wants to talk about the Olympics. We haven't heard from Mike in quite some time. Mike, how you doing?
How you doing, my man? Let me ask you before we get to the Olympics. Is Kayfelder playing in the league? Playing down in the Desmond Ferguson's
No, he didn't. No, Kayfelder did not play in this year's summer league. He's preparing, of course. I believe, Isaac, didn't he play in the summer league out in Vegas?
Yes, he did.
He did
with
play
the Cleveland Cavaliers.
With the Cavs, exactly. With the Cavs, but no, he wasn't present for the summer league here in Mid Michigan.
So when you graduate, like Brian Forbes or Matt Costello, you can't play in the Desmond Ferguson Summer League?
Well, no. Bryn Forbes was in the house, and Denzel Valentine 2 weeks ago present at the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am as well. So, no, I mean, and also Jabari Parker of the Milwaukee Bucks, he was probably the biggest name that we saw grace the stage of the Moneyball Summer League Pro-Am, and he bought out, I believe that was last month sometime. So, no, there's no stipulations with that.
Okay, then. Let me ask you this about the Olympics. You agree with Michael Phelps being in the open ceremonies to carry the flag in for the United States?
Yeah, why not? I mean, that's the most decorated Olympian in U.S. history, so I like the pick if you ask me. Are you against it? And if so, why, Mike?
No, I'm not against it. I agree with that choice because, I mean, what Michael Phelps did in all the previous Olympics, Ben Sterling, too, that's not like having Usain Bolt not carrying the Jamaican flag in for the Jamaicans. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with
you. He's just been that dominant in sport. What I was going to ask you about the Olympics, too, you know Canada is not in this Olympics?
I did not know that. Are you sure about that?
Mike? Yes, I am. Canada for basketball. They're not in this Olympics.
Oh, just for basketball.
Yes, for basketball.
I was about to say. I was about to say. Hold on, that don't even sound right, Mike. Okay, just for basketball. I'm not surprised there. I mean, that's not overwhelmingly surprising there, Mike.
Do you think Andrew Wiggins would that would have helped him a lot? And Andrew Wiggins.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
What about Andrew Wiggins?
He's Canadian. He's on.
Yeah,
would
I know.
Help him? Development as a player.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that anybody who plays on the Olympic level, I mean, just getting out there and getting reps is always good because you're constantly working on your game. But there's also it's a two-edged sword with me because there are some guys who believe that if they participate in the Olympics, they get overworked. You know, the grind of an 82, you know, game season in the NBA coupled with if you make the playoffs and make a deep run in the NBA playoffs and then having to go out and overseas and play in the Olympics. I mean, sometimes – that can be a bit too much for players. And, again, I've had a discussion about Olympic basketball, okay? We all know the U.S., they're favored every single year. They dominate every single year. There are blowouts game after game after game. In my opinion, an Olympic gold medal in the sport of basketball does not mean nearly as much as an NBA Finals championship. So a lot of guys look at it and say, I really could use the summer to rest instead of going over there and playing.
How about the girls, women's basketball team? Look at how many gold medals they completely won. You know,
right.
Do you think it means that much to them more than the guys do?
Without a doubt, because right now the state of the WNBA in particular is at such a crucial standpoint. I mean, we've even had talks here on the show about how, you know, the upper echelons of the WNBA are looking at things and saying, man, I mean, the league is really hurting right now. How much more can we have the WNBA? I mean, they've gone to as far as, and you'll see this in the NBA as well, there's ads everywhere on their jerseys to try and bring in extra revenue. But any chance that women's basketball has to put their brand on the map, they need to do it, no matter what.
Okay. Here's one more question. I'll let you move the show along. Now, you see the soccer events they had down in Ann Arbor and stuff about Manchester
was there.
United and all of those things. Why could they bring it down to East Lansing? Why could they bring the Spartan Stadium? I let you comment. What's your take on that? And I let you comment on that one. You have a good weekend, okay?
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it. Isaac, you want to handle that one?
I can get that definitely.
That's a good question. I think maybe Ann Arbor is a bigger draw.
I think that's one part of it. I think the other important part is proximity to Detroit, because obviously Detroit is such an international world city. You want to bring in as many different ethnicities as possible because soccer is a global game. That way you get the entire world feel. So I think that was a big part of it. Also, simple numbers, simple arithmetic. Ann Arbor, the big house, it's one of the biggest soccer stadiums in the world if it you is. Make it into a soccer stadium. So it makes sense just to bring the game there, get as much attendance, draw as much interest as possible. Why not hype it up as much as possible?
I agree with you. All right, folks, again, call in 517-355-WKAR. When we come back, we will chat a bit more about the Olympics as the IOC has banned 118 Russian athletes the day before the Olympics start tonight with the opening ceremony. So we'll chat about that. Also, the Detroit Tigers fell in the series finale against the Chicago White Sox. We'll recap what went wrong for the D when we come back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. The Detroit Tigers fell in the series finale against the Chicago White Sox yesterday afternoon. 6-3 was the final as Jordan Zimmermann returned from the disabled list to try and close the door and push the Tigers' winning streak to 9 straight wins. Well, it was halted at 8 and due to the Cleveland Indians getting a dub against the Twins, 9-2, the final of that game, the Indians regained a 3-game lead over the Tigers in the American League Central. So, you know, when you evaluate it again, Jordan Zimmermann returning from, of course, the neck strain, and, you know, he's been on the disabled list for quite some time now. Not a great outing for him. And he also even had, after the very brief outing on the mound, he had muscle tightness on his right side that did require an MRI. Now, the good news is the MRI was negative, and he is fine. He's cleared to play moving forward. But you could clearly see that there was some rust in Jay Zim's game as he had to start yesterday against the Chicago White Sox. 6 earned runs in just 2 innings. It was ugly. It was ugly, folks. And, you know, the reason why the Tigers acquired Jay Zim was to solidify that number 2 starting pitching rotation. And right now, Jay Zim is on pace for his lowest inning output since 2010. And he has a 4.44 ERA over 16 starts. Now, I also want to say this. I think it's a bit unfair to expect Jay Zim to really come out the gates after being on the disabled list since last month and to just shut the door on the Chicago White Sox. And again, I understand they were riding this 8-game win streak and everyone's talking about the Tigers and, you know, everyone's feeling good about the Tigers moving forward. They can compete in the division. I heard some people out there saying, hey, they can catch up to the Indians if they keep it up, and they could even, you know, at worst make a wild card spot. I mean, everyone was riding high, but I think this is a reminder. With Jay Zim coming out and having the sort of outing that he had, it's a reminder that, hey, you don't want to get too high just yet because there is still a ton of baseball left to play. I understand this is the moment where you need the Tigers. If they are going to have any playoff hopes, this is the moment where the Tigers have to start playing their best. And they can't afford a 6-earned-run, 2-inning performance from Jay Zim. But the starting pitching has been so up and down this season that are you really surprised? You know, and again, Jay Zim is just coming back. Actually, at no point this season, and I would be hard-pressed, heck, anybody would be hard-pressed to find any team where this reigns opposite. But the Tigers at no point this season have had 5 of their projected starting pitchers at the start of spring training healthy. At no point. Jay Zim, Verlander, JV, Anibal Sanchez, Mike Pelfrey, and Daniel Norris. At no point since the start of spring training have all 5 of those individuals been healthy for the Detroit Tigers. A baseball season is a grind. You are going to have wear and tear, which brings me to my next point. the Detroit Tigers, if they don't stay healthy, you better believe they're not catching the Cleveland Indians. Again, and how about the Indians? I mean, 9-2 over the Minnesota Twins, and it was the first time in baseball history. I don't know if you guys saw this, but they had all four infielders hit a home run last night. And then they had all three outfielders have an assist. That's the first time that has ever happened in baseball history. So the Indians from top to bottom, I mean, everybody's chasing this team. They are the best team, I believe, in the American League. And health is a big concern right now for the Tigers. Can they stay healthy to make a legitimate run to cause Cleveland to get a bit nervous? Cameron Maben, he had a thumb injury. He didn't play yesterday because of that. And also Victor Martinez, he fouled a ball off of his foot Wednesday in that 2-1 win, and he didn't play either yesterday. So the Tigers have to, you know, they have to stay healthy, which is easier said than done at this point in the year. But if they do stay healthy, watch out. That's all I'm saying. I'm not buying the Tigers just yet. Again, three games in back of the Cleveland Indians. When you look at the wild card standings right now, the Tigers are just a half game in back. Right now you have the Boston Red Sox, the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Baltimore Orioles in the mix for that. And back of the Tigers, you have the Houston Astros at 3.5 games in back. So the Tigers are still in this thing, but you have to get consistency at all areas. And one thing that I really haven't brought up much during the latest stretch of baseball for the Tigers is the bullpen. I think the bullpen has been pretty consistent at closing out games, protecting leads, and keeping this Detroit Tigers team in games. That hasn't been the problem for the Tigers this year. It's been inconsistencies at bat. It's been inconsistencies to start games with the starting pitching. So we'll see how this irons out, folks. Again, Justin Verlander will take the mound. He is 11-6 on the year with a 3.54 ERA. He will face former teammate Curtis Granderson as the Mets come to town at 7:10 p.m. For a matchup to open a three-game weekend series at Comerica Park. Noah Syndergaard is scheduled to start for New York. And how about Miguel Cabrera? Man, Mickey has turned back the clock a bit here. He added his 25th homer and 70th RBI of the season with a solo homer in the eighth inning. He had 11 consecutive seasons. Get this, 11 consecutive seasons with at least 25 homers before, of course, falling to just 18 last year. So impressive. But he returns to that reign as of last night. So what do you think about the Tigers? I mean, moving forward, do you think this is a team that, again, had an 8-game win streak, you know, get snapped. Just one game. Again, we're so reactionary in the world of sports. So maybe, you know, again, without Jay Zim's poor start, I mean, hey, who knows? The Tigers probably would have won 9 straight. Do you think they can ride some momentum as the year progresses here and will possibly nip at the heels of the Cleveland Indians and make this thing interesting in the AL Central? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I also want to bring up this story because I think it is very important and pretty timely, seeing as though tonight the Rio de Janeiro Summer Olympics will kick off officially with a 3-hour opening ceremony starting at 7:30 p.m. tonight. I'm looking forward to it. The opening ceremony is one of the greatest spectacles in all of sports. And some news preceded tonight's opening ceremony concerning Russia. A total of 271 Russian athletes have been cleared to take part in the Rio Olympics. That means that 118 competitors of the 389-strong Russian team have been banned from competing out in Rio. Why? Well, I'll tell you how we got here. An independent report undertaken by a professor by the name of Richard McLaurin and published last month alleged that a wide-scale doping scandal by Russian athletes had been covered up by the country's security services over a number of years with the full knowledge of the Ministry of Sport. Yeah, crazy stuff, right? Yeah, the country knew about this, allegedly, and said, you know what, we need to cover this up. Vladimir Putin and company, they said, you know what, I need to cover this up. And, you know, the reason I want to bring the story up, because there will certainly be an undertone of quote-unquote doping anytime we talk about a Russian winning a medal throughout the course of this month. You better believe it. This story is that big, folks. Anytime you have the country in collusion with the athletes, knowing that you're using that you're doping up to try and gain a competitive advantage, that's a huge story, and it goes against everything ethical about the Olympics or any sport for that matter. And you know, it's so funny though, because you look at Vladimir Putin, president of the Russian Federation. I go back to that. That whole special that HBO's Real Sports had with Bryant Gumbel, they did a remarkable job on reporting on this. You know, and they kind of had a section on Vladimir Putin and how he used the Winter Olympics to flex his muscle as the president, and his approval rating went through the roof as Russia did a great job of hosting the Winter Olympics. And get this, you know, Russia actually won 13 gold medals out in Sochi. That's two more than runner-up Norway. Overall, Russian athletes won 33 medals, five more than the United States is 28. The first time that the host nation swept both medal counts since Norway did at the 1952 Winter Games in Oslo. Now, that moment has everyone looking back at the Winter Olympics with a bit of a side eye saying, okay, how many of your athletes were doped up, though? So this has become the controversy within the competitive realm of the Olympics. And I haven't even talked about, you know, just Rio in general and the water pollution and the political unrest and so on and so forth. So this is going to be a very interesting month as the Summer Olympics officially kick off tonight, Isaac. What are your thoughts about this whole situation concerning Russian athletes?
Yeah, when the crowd greets Russia, I'm going to be interested to hear the venom in the jeers, because it will not be a friendly reception, and nor should it be. When I was hosting, I said that I believe that Russia should have been entirely banned from these games, and that is unfair to the athletes who have worked their entire life in complete and justice fairness to get to this point. But at the same time, when it's state-sponsored doping, you have no idea how deep the incision is into these athletes. It could be as high as 50 to 60%. And to institute almost posthumous doping after the scandal's already released and then make a ruling from that, I'm not sure if it's fair to the other athletes from other countries who say, well, what if this guy was doping half the summer? How do you know that he beat me fair and square when you just decided to test him after all of these results came out? So I think it certainly mars the event itself, not nearly as much as half of the other transgressions by Brazil leading into these games. But even so, Russia, in my opinion, they shouldn't be even walking through the tunnel.
Yeah, it's very disheartening anytime you hear about a corruption of this magnitude in the world of sports on the Olympic level. I mean, this is the highest level of sport, international competition we're talking about. And it almost leads me to say, because I don't believe that, and I refuse to believe that all 389 strong doped up. Again, there are a few athletes who are clean in that pool, right? And I feel bad for them, because I also thought about this, because again, this was in collusion with the Russian government, you know? So they, and the Russian government knew about it. They tried to cover it up. They knew their athletes were doping. They were going after medals, because I think that Vladimir Putin realizes that when you have Olympic success, it's a huge win, not just on the athletic stage, but for your country as well. So many dollars rolling because of that, right?
Oh, we've seen this time and time again historically. Exactly. You think about Nazi Germany trying to preserve the Aryan supremacy through the Olympics.
Exactly. And, quick tidbit there, you know, in that Real Sports documentary, it also talks about, you know, the Olympic torch running that goes on and how it's passed on from person to person to person. Guess who came up with that?
No idea.
The Nazis.
Really?
How crazy is that, right? Adolf Hitler and the Nazis.
I'll never look at that the same way.
Nuts.
Wow.
Nuts, right? They came up with that tradition because they wanted to showcase the Olympics in their country. So they had someone run with the torch all across the country. Huh. And that's how it started. Nuts, right? Learn something every day. Learn something new every day, right? Where I'm going with this, though, because anytime you have corruption of this level, though, it, you know, and I talk about how out of the 389 pool, there are many athletes who are clean, wanted to do it the right way, right? But it almost makes me think that the Russian government pressured a lot of the clean athletes to try and go down the dirty route as well. They wanted to win that bad because you went out of your way to try and cover this up that much. And I'm pretty sure you sat down with a few of the clean athletes who refused to dope and may have pressured them into trying certain substances because you were that crazed about winning. I'm pretty sure that went down as well. That's just a theory of mine.
Well, it's state-sponsored doping. That's the title that I read, and that means that the government actually would have implemented it and instituted it. Two of the athletes who were the whistleblowers on this case both lived in the U.S. They were Russian athletes in the U.S. They were clear to play because of that reason. But that is exactly why you look at this with a side eye. You question every single athlete who's playing, because if they were in Russia, who's to say it wasn't a Lance Armstrong team case where, hey, you want to be on the team? Take this pill. Take this shot. Take this whatever it is. But you need to dope, because we're not going to have any lackeys who are just following the Olympic rules right now. It's upsetting, and it's really a troubling sign for the Olympics in general.
It definitely is. Let's hit our first break really briefly here. Oh, before we do, though, I want to bring up just a few of my must-see items when it comes to the Olympic viewership of many of you out there. Again, you're talking about 11,000 athletes, more than 200 countries. It's going to be off the chain. A lot of different sports that many people will be following. I also want to bring up Usain Bolt. Usain Bolt, the fastest man in the world. He's won gold in the 100, 200, and 4x100 relay in the past two Olympics. You can catch Bolt's first event on August 12th, Friday, the 100-meter prelims at 8:30 a.m., Michael Phelps swimming. His first event will take place Monday, August 8th, in the men's 200-meter butterfly heats. That will take place at 12:27 p.m., so you can watch Phelps and then tune into Current Sports on Monday. Also, the 19-year-old phenom by the name of Simone Biles of gymnastics, she will be competing tomorrow at 8:45 a.m., Oh, I can't wait to watch her, just go out there and do her thing, because she has been heralded as the best Olympian in the world of gymnastics ever. The only thing she's missing is a gold medal, and now she has the opportunity for that feat. And also, of course, you got Olympic basketball. You've got the refugee Olympic team. I mean, there's so many different storylines here. That's just a taste, though, I wanted to throw out. Let's hear our second break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on today's Current Sports by bringing you a very cool feature centered on historic baseball, brought to you by our very own Peter Wharf. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is a very cool feature to close our week, I should say. Today's Major League Baseball bears really little resemblance to the 19th century variety. The differences were on display recently at a game of historic baseball played at Dearborn's Greenfield Village. I remember that. I actually took a field trip there back in elementary school. Now, in the latest installment of Current State's Summer Travel Series, WKAR's Peter Wharf covers a bit of living history.
It's a perfect summer afternoon in Michigan. 85 degrees, low humidity, bright blue sky, a few puffy clouds. And on a grassy hill under the shade of towering oaks and locust trees, I'm watching a baseball game. Historic baseball played every weekend at 1:30 into August at Dearborn's Greenfield Village. The two resident teams are playing today. It's the Nationals versus the La-Di-Das. Historic baseball seasons culminate in a championship series at season's end. Marcus Dixon has been an umpire in past championship games at the Village.
So we have teams who are playing baseball the way it was played in 1867. with the equipment, with the rules, with the uniforms, to try to recreate the game in the days before there was professional baseball, when it was an amateur game, my town against your town for the glory and honor of our town.
Historic baseball at Greenfield Village is a time machine. Players wear period button-up long-sleeve uniforms, sleeves rolled up today, with apologies to the ladies. They play by 1867 rules, like balls played off branches hanging over fair territory, and outs called when caught off the first bounce, when it's foul. Don't worry, the players will get it right. More on that later. There's no pitcher's mound, and gloves are optional, not preferred. But Marcus Dixon feels the appeal of historic baseball goes much deeper.
Historic baseball is not just old rules, it's not just old equipment, it's also taking you to a different time when the world was different. The way that people thought about honesty, the way that people thought about competition was different. The games were played hard, the clubs who played wanted to win, but they certainly wanted to win fairly. It's really interesting when people do come to see a historic baseball game, how quickly they become attached to the game. I can't count the number of times someone has said to me, this is so much more fun than going to see a major league game. And there's a lot of reasons for that. One is that the game is exciting. They say people who are playing not because they're being paid millions of dollars, but because they really, really love this game.
Dixon continues to explore historic baseball's creed of fair play. This time I caught him between innings taking a break from his la-di-da's catcher's position.
The things that are appealing to me most of all is that this is a game where you're expected to play fairly. If you know you're out, you leave the field. If you know you're not out and the umpire calls you out, you tip your hat and you leave the field. And if you were to not do that, if you were to know that you were out and stay on the field, people wouldn't want you to play. This is a game where in the championship game in the World Tournament, there was a play where the umpire called a runner out on first, and the first baseman said, no, sir, the throw pulled my foot off the base. My foot was not on the base. The runner was not out. In the championship game. And everybody said, that's exactly the right thing to do. And so that's the kind of game I want to play.
That guy in the background with the running color commentary is Ken Jacobs. He's wearing a white shirt and floppy black bow tie, light gray trousers and vest, and a cream-colored stovepipe hat, sort of a huskier Abe Lincoln in negative. You can hear Ken all across the field. There's a speaker hidden in a wooden box that looks sort of like it might cover an old well or something. He's another guy that has the game deep in his DNA. And as a bonus, Ken is funny.
Right now, Mr. Robert just kind of slowed down there. I thought he was going to throw, but I think he looked more like modern dancing or something.
As Greenfield Village's steam locomotive passes by, players stop in mid-inning for huzzas to the Iron Horse. This happens a few times every game. Announcer Ken Jacobs has played other roles on the historic baseball field. In this case, he runs our time machine from the 1860s to about 1912. Ken takes the field for a pregame speech, this time wearing a dark gray suit and round spectacles. His character this time, Teddy Roosevelt.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I love this game of baseball, and I'm honored that the National League and the American League have honored me with a golden pass to go and see their games anytime. But I'd rather see fellows like this. You know, my sons Kermit and Quentin play on the White House lawn occasionally, or they did when we were in the White House, and we hope we'll get me back there soon. And I'm glad to report 23-4 was the score for Quentin's team and Kermit's team. We were honored to win, right there on the White House lawn. Now, I'm more of a boxer myself. I'm in it for the fight. And I'll tell you what, we have election in front of us for 12, and I hope you'll be in it for the fight and vote for the Bull Moose Party, fellas, so we can get all these ladies to vote for us in 16 when we win women's suffrage.
After the fifth inning, I also had a chance to speak with one of the guys on the other team, the Nationals. Jack Spiteman got into the historic game a few years back. He plays outfield.
A friend that I played softball with got on the year before, and he let me know that they had an opening. I came and tried out and got on the team. You really have to have two things to play. You have to know how to play baseball, but the most important thing is to be able to interact with the crowd.
Well, we finished. The Dog
Crowd, because what we want to do is have an instructional here. Teach people about the way baseball was played back in 1867 and the different rules and how they're different from today. And it's such a great environment with, you know, being here at Greenfield Village, the history they have. So,
the history and the ways of days gone by, says Jack Spiteman, far removed from scenes like this. What many consider one of the game's most calculating and controversial acts, the Pine Tar incident, which started with a home run by a Hall of Famer.
George Brett has just homered, and Billy Martin and the Yankees want the bat. Look at Martin.
Well, what they're talking about, Frank, is that he's got too much pine tar, and you've got to have a certain amount of distance from the trademark of the bat and the pine tar. They might be going to call George Brett out.
Well, the Yankees win. He's out.
Yes, sir.
Brett is out. Look at this. Brett is out.
And he's steaming mad.
He is out and having to be forcibly restrained from hitting plate umpire Tim McClellan.
From George Brett and Billy Martin back to Jack Spiteman.
Honestly, what I like is it's a gentleman's game. We're on our honor out there. If you make a catch, if you tag somebody out, you state that, and generally people agree. We're playing, you know, we're not playing for money. We're playing for the love of the game, for the sport. Like I said, it's a gentleman's game. We play a full nine innings because it would be ungentlemanly to quit in the ninth inning, okay, that kind of thing. And that's just kind of lacking in today's society. Honestly, I really enjoy, and I enjoy the exercise, obviously, the chance that I can get out here and play. And I have to get out there and play left field again.
I'll talk to you later.
This year's World Tournament of Historic Baseball is Saturday and Sunday, August 13th and 14th at Greenfield Village. For Current State, I'm Peter Wharf.
Well, they go for the fourth out, but they really don't need it. Our progress of our game stopped by progress out there. Let's give them three cheers and get them on their way.
Right, how cool was that, right? The Lottie Dies? That's the best sports team name ever. I absolutely love that. Thanks a lot to Current State's own Peter Wharf for bringing that feature to us. And you hear the piano riff, that means Reflection of Friday. So let's reflect a bit on our favorite moments here on the show and beyond throughout this week. Russell Westbrook, big shout out to you, my man. He signed a 3-year, $85 million contract with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Just love that story. Staying loyal, and now this is Russell's team. I mean, Russell's going to be on a mission next year, and I can't wait to watch him on NBA League Pass night in and night out. Trent Richardson, if you haven't seen the E60 feature on him, former Alabama running back, on how his family spent $1.6 million of his money and just totally just messed him over financially, check that story out. Crazy stuff. Draymond Green and his fiasco on Snapchat, that was a fun moment here on the show. And also, Pelé will be skipping the opening ceremony, Brazil's most famous athlete, because of his health. That's going to be weird, Isaac.
That's a sad event. And Neymar, of course, is participating in the Olympics this year, and he's one of the most notable soccer players in the entire world. Brazil superstar, the next Pelé is what they deem him, so I'm excited for that. But yeah, Russell Westbrook, that is my shining star of the week.
Gotta love it. All right, folks, same time, same place. So on Monday, have a great weekend. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Be easy, people.